As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Skull Stories. The construction of the dream.
Time for two more.
But they left a minute 11. They left too much time for Teddy.
Personal foul. Clipping.
Hold on to your butt.
And now for something completely different.
P.A. 9 to noon. Sounds of Hockey.
Lost it there to Zucker, and Zucker will play it deep back here into the Toronto zone. Hyman, he gave it right away. The chance that time for Stahl, they score! Stahl threw it on net, save, and a big rebound for Zucker. Zucker cashes in, and the Wild have tied the hockey game 1-1.
Wild.
Gibbs for Suter, back now for Stahl. Stahl north in the right circle. Back now for Suter, back for Stahl. One-timer on goal, save. Anderson dropped the puck, rebound, score! Anderson had it, dropped it, and Zucker knocks it in for the Wild.
We wish you a good night.
For Gallagher on the left side. They work it back on the right, and a shot whistled wide that time by Galchenyuk, moving in and back the other way for Minnesota. A chance now. Zucker with a burst of speed goes in all alone. He scores! Zucker scores on a wicked backhander. Shorthanded goal for Minnesota, and the Wild lead it by a score of 1-0.
And we leave you on a good note.
Stahl battles right wing wall against Pacioretty. Got it over to Niederreiter. Niederreiter shoots, he scores! May have been took by Zucker out in front. Red light is on. It's 2-0 Minnesota. They won a puck battle there as the Canadians tried to push it out. And it's either Niederreiter or Zucker with goal number two. Oh! I'll get it ahead here for Zucker. He's got an empty net at the other end. Shoots, scores! Zucker, the hat trick. He scores right in front of the Montreal bench. Empty net goal by Zucker. He had an even strength goal, an empty net goal, and a shorthanded goal. Here's Dumble with a shot. That deflects wide. Karev scores! Zucker took the shot from back behind, but that may have hit the Philadelphia goaltender and came back in. If it does, that's Zucker's sixth straight goal here for Minnesota.
Wild.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is 9 to noon from the KFAM Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios, the radio station, FM 100.3, The Fan, the producer, Eric Nordquist, host, Paul Allen. That's a little old me. In studio to jumpstart 9 to noon.
Russo Radio.
Michael Russo from The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. What has gotten into Jason Zucker? And good morning.
good morning. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he's feeling it right now. And if he scores the first goal in the game tonight for the Wild, he'll tie the NHL record
right
for consecutive goals for one team, two away from breaking it. But most impressive.
And that record was set in the 20s, right?
Exactly. And
that was like 29.
Yep. And I think it was repeated by Brian Noonan, actually, a name that we haven't heard in a long time in 1991.
Noonan?
He's the first NHL player since 2004, Glenn Murray, to score six straight of his team's goals. And he's on fire. And most impressive is he's doing this on the road. Mm-hmm. He's tied for first in the NHL with eight goals on the road. Tied for first in the NHL with six third period goals. His last five goals have come in that fashion.
Yeah.
And he's just been absolutely fantastic and needed it and has taken the one storyline that we haven't talked about because he's been the story the last couple of days, him and Devan Dubnyk, is the fact that nobody else on the team is scoring.
Right.
They have not gotten a goal from a player not named Jason Zucker in 184 minutes and 4 seconds, and that goal was a play that was set
Eric
up by
Stahl?
Jason Zucker, a shorthanded goal in Boston to put the Wild back in that game that they really didn't deserve to be in. So he's been playing great, Zuck.
The knowledge, the opinions, the stats.
Wow, what a great hockey mind.
Right, it's good times, bad times. So, like Mikael Granlin, Nino Niederreiter, Eric Stahl, some of the players on whom the head coach would expect to score more consistently, yep. It's not happening. So it's great that Jason is on fire, but I mean, like, big picture-wise, Is there still a little bit of a problem?
Well, I think that there's definitely a concern. You know, Koivu's another one that's completely dried up. Chris Stewart doesn't have a point in nine games, and he's been getting elevated minutes at times, and some power play time. Ennis is somebody that they need more from. So there's a lot of guys that are dried up. The real quality sign that's happened the last couple games is Devin Dubnyk has looked like the Dubnyk of a couple years ago.
Right.
You know, last game, I was just telling Swedberg in the elevator, I mean, last game against Philly might have been the cleanest and most perfect game I've seen Devin Dubnyk play in over 2 years.
Wow.
There was not one point in that game that things looked hairy. Where if you know, in Montreal, he gets the 41 save shutout, but there were a couple real scary moments, pucks at his feet that looked like, you know, were going to be those fluke goals again. And, of course, there were technically two goals that were overturned in that game, you know, in that shutout. So just the fact that he stopped his last 73 shots, you'd love to see him carry that into tonight's game against the Flyers.
At Russo Hockey via Twitter, he's Michael Russo, preeminent hockey opinion in the market, in the country, and in the universe. He writes for The Athletic. You can subscribe at theathletic.com. Become a subscriber at theathletic.com. Other than Jason and Devin Dubnyk, like, what's up with the vibe right now? What's up with the squad?
Well, right now it's positive. It's amazing the way that things change in three or four games. Mm-hmm. After the Boston game was the lowest I've ever seen that locker room. It was definitely the lowest I've seen Bruce Boudreau in the regular season game. I mean, when he's calling his players Keystone Cops because of their absolute incompetence, that is not a good sign. And then, you know, to me, the most impressive thing that happened here is, so the Wild show up at practice on Tuesday in Toronto.
Yep.
And with back-to-back games coming up and three games and four nights on the road, that's normally a time that the coach would be afraid to really have them in a battle practice because you're going to take away maybe their fatigue or fatigue them going into the next couple games. But Bruce felt that the Boston game and the, you know, Chicago loss before that was so unacceptable that he ran them through the gauntlet that day. He tore the paint off the walls, figuratively, in the locker room before, during a very humbling video session, I'm told, by a couple players. And then on the ice, he ran them hard. It was a battle practice. And then what happens is the next night against the Maple Leafs, the Wild play well,
yeah,
but lose.
Right.
And then going into a second and back-to-back, that could have ripped their soul out. And
okay,
instead,
casual hockey fan wants to know what a grueling battle practice is.
Well, it was down low, hard, not a lot of special teams. It was all just battling, wind puck battles along the wall.
All right.
You know, not cruise the way that they did against the Bruins, not turning pucks over. It was physical, and it was at times nasty, and guys like Koivu and Staal and Suter were the ones kind of leading that charge that day.
Yeah.
But again, what I thought was so impressive is that Montreal game. You know, that Toronto game, to play so well after such a demoralizing loss in Boston, but not get rewarded with anything in Toronto. To play a game where you basically gave up four scoring chances and a couple goals that weren't even considered scoring chances.
Yeah.
And then to lose and not let it affect your next game against Montreal, I think, was a big character builder for this team. And it seems like every year early in the season, the Wild have some sort of, you know, turning point. I remember a couple of years ago at the Corral in Calgary, the Wild had an awful loss against, I believe it was Vancouver. They go there, and boom, the whole season turns around. And, you know, hey, it's only been a couple games, and if, hey, the Wild lay an egg tonight, we're probably back to square one going into the Nashville game. But you do look at, you wonder if that Tuesday practice could potentially be something to build upon.
Right. So do you sense a run of positivity, or with Philly and Nashville mm-hmm. this week, then they go to Washington after that, right?
Yeah, tough games coming up.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a tough week.
Yeah. You know, again, what I think is so positive is just seeing Devin play this way. You right. just can't, you know, Devin had not been good, and you can't get that type of goaltending and be successful in this type of conference. And, you know, right now they still have a lot of points to make up to get themselves back into where they want to be. Mm-hmm. It's clearly going to be a grind the rest of the way, but this team has shown its ability during several years, not just last year where they were unbelievable for the first, you know, for the, you know, December, January, February, but in previous years where they've had to save their seasons, this team has shown the ability to get on some unbelievable runs. Last year, at one point, they won 12 in a row in December. So this team has that ability, as long as it's getting the goaltending that Devin Dubnyk has provided the last two games.
A couple of segments, jump starts 9 to noon with Russo Radio from The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. Said squad settling in with blue liners, and any signs Mikhail Granlin is set to take off? Those topics and more around the corner. That's part of the West Bend Mutual Insurance set list, which includes Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com at 9:35. The 9 to noon Case Keenum, the 9 to noon obligatory Case Keenum Teddy Bridgewater talker at 9:55. Johnny Krasinski from The Athletic at 10:15 on the Wolves victory last evening. Paul Charchian, 10:45, fantasy pickup joint. Ryan Burns, Gopher Illustrated, Gophers football and college football, 10:55. And highfalutin sports agent Blake Barrett's in studio, 11:15. Nordo produces. I'm Paul Allen from the KFAN Bryant Heating and Cooling Studios. Good morning. This is 9 to noon.
Fire away.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword BILLS to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's BILLS to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
Your hockey team, the Skatriots, and you are Bruce Belichick. We are like you.
You're an idiot.
On the Fan.
Join KFAN in supporting Quinn's Cup. It's an outdoor pond hockey event that emphasizes the love of hockey and raises funds for the Myocarditis Foundation. Register a team now or volunteer now. Just go to KFAN.com, keyword community.
Rube Nation, do as 9 to noon has done. Do as bumper to bumper with Barrero has done. Do as the Fan has done. Sign up with The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. The stable of scribes includes the well-respected Michael Russo on the Wild and hockey, John Krasinski on the Timberwolves and Gophers basketball, Britt Robson also opines on Minnesota Timberwolves basketball, and there's more on the horizon. Go to KFAN.com, make the keyword athletic, and save 20%.
I can't 20%. Remember. 20%. There you go.
Save 20% on a yearly subscription. It's like $3 and change a month. I look at it every single day. Got a Russo Radio newsletter in my email this morning, updating me on what's on the site, what's coming on the site. It's fantastic. It's innovative. And it has a side of edgy to it, too.
Do you like the newsletter? Is that a good idea?
A lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's a quick read.
Yeah.
So, I open my email and I see Newsletter Athletic. So I know it's either, with the way my subscription is designed, I know it's either from you,
yep,
John Krasinski, or somebody intimately involved with 9 to noon or the Fan or the local sports scene. So then I mash on it, and then it's penned by Michael Russo. Good morning. And it kind of has a personal good morning feel, yeah, to it.
Well, it's usually the good first morning, thing I everybody. Do it, I do it at like 5 a.m. and, yeah, kind of schedule it at 7.
No, but it's cool,
we've had so much content on the site the last couple of weeks that like part of it is just to kind of like,
yeah,
hey, I know you all out there that are subscribing don't have all the time in the world to go to the site, so I just want to let you know if you're interested in this, yeah, this, and this. So.
Well, I'm a habit
guy.
We
have so much college hockey, yeah, stuff too on there, and
right,
we had a great twin story yesterday, and sweet, so there's a lot of stuff on there. So
yeah,
sometimes when you have too much,
yeah,
there's only so much time people have to read.
Well, I'm a habit guy. So when I have you in studio, yep, or my weekly chat with Bruce Boudreau, so that I can stay up to date on the squad, I will start my Wild prep morning with The Athletic.
Yeah.
Just to see what's out there, see what sidebars have been written. But like the newsletter you sent today, as the kids would say, it's lit.
Yeah.
Because you reminded us there was a game tonight. If you missed the story on the Lakeville goalie for the Canadians, here it is.
Yep.
I have a big Foligno piece coming,
yeah,
today. Look for that. Facebook this, Krasinski that, Robson this. And have a good morning that.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a very nice
awesome
touch.
And this Foligno story, which was one of the big reasons why I was up this morning, I was kind of finishing it up. It's on Athletic subscriber Nick Foligno and his brother Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool story, just kind of on their whole family life. They're the sons of Mike Foligno.
Yeah.
Mike was a big time goal scorer, but also one of the toughest hombres that have ever put on skates in the NHL. So it's kind of on how these two brothers each are a hybrid of their dad. They they took all his attributes, but half went to Nick. He's the goal scorer, and half went to Marcus. He's the hit like a truck, wild, you know, nutty guy on the ice, and it's kind of neat. And then they're also just an incredible family. You know, Nick is the captain of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Last year, he's the first player in NHL history to win both the Mark Messier Award and the King Clancy Award because he's such a humanitarian. Gave $1 million to a couple children's hospitals, along with his brother and sisters, and dad created the Janice Foligno Foundation, which is named after their mom who died of breast cancer. And so it's kind of on their whole life, and there are some funny back and forths between Nick and Marcus for the story, and I'm glad I finally got to get it written. So I think that'll be up, honestly, probably within the next 5-10 minutes.
Russo,
just being edited now.
Russo Radio in studio.
Wild.
You sense they're settling in with these blue liners?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he'd still... I thought that Brodin... I thought Brodin actually struggled a bit in Philly, but I thought Dumba was really good, and obviously had the big play on the game-winning goal by Jason Zucker. But you definitely, you know, same thing in Montreal. I mean, that's what you're going to get with Dumba is that, you know, there's going to be high risk, high reward. You know, there were a couple big time boo-boos in Montreal.
Yeah.
But he also saved two big time mistakes by other guys. One with a dive on a 2-on-1 to break it down low. And the other one where I thought Suter really messed up. Just
do
being
you
kind
sense
of unaware.
He's engaged every game.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And so obviously you got Suter and Spurgeon. You know, I still think that they'd probably be, it would be better if it was Brodin and Spurgeon and maybe Dumba and Suter, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the most important thing is for that third pair to give them more consistent minutes. You know,
well, why do you think that other quartet is the right way to do it?
I just think that, you know, if you look at the fact that Brodin and Dumba have had their struggles this year, I just think it's time to maybe try it a little different. You know, Spurgeon hasn't gotten off to the best start, but he's also been big in a lot of games. And so, you know, you just think that maybe at times it'd be cool to kind of be a little more aggressive, maybe put Dumba on with Suter and then have more of a shutdown pair with Spurgeon and Brodin. Mm-hmm. But a lot of this is because, you know, they load up the top four because I don't think Bruce still has a ton of confidence in the bottom two.
Right.
You know, Quincy has been very, very up and down. You know, Riley has been good. For the most part, but you know, still Corsi wise, if you want to buy into that, he's the lowest in the NHL for any defenseman.
Yeah.
Now a lot of that is who he's on the ice with. You know, I think I've said it to you before. I mean, you know, I take his Corsi a little bit with a grain of salt because, which again, of course, he is possession numbers. It's you know, it's basically kind of a model to let you know, basically where the shots are coming from offensively versus defensively.
Yeah, okay.
And he's, you know, bottom of the league. But a lot of that is because he's on the ice with third and fourth liners who just seem to always refuse to shoot. So you're just going to have a lot of shots against when you're on the ice. And Olsson, I think, has gotten better. I think Olsson, you know, I look at the Philly game, I look at the Montreal game, and I look at the Toronto game as being one of their best defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good sign. And I talked to Bruce a little bit just walking away from the post game in Philly about Olsson. And he loved the fact that when Brodin was in the box that Olsson took such control in that Philly game. And he said, you know, he feels bad that he's scratching Quincy right now. And the other night in Toronto, Mike Riley, but he just feels the only way to get Olsson better is to play him right now. So I think Olsson's going to be back in the lineup tonight. And then against the Flyers, you know, do you come back and put Quincy back in the lineup, or do you go with the same lineup that won you an impressive game the other night in Philly and play Riley again?
Any signs Mikael Granlund is set to take off?
You know, I think he's laboring right now. He's had a tough first couple months. First of all, 2-3 weeks before training camp, he hurt his ankle. And those things just linger. Yeah, I mean, it just does. And I don't think he's 100% from that. He missed a lot of training camp because of that. And then he hurt his groin. And then he took a shot, a blocked a shot in Toronto. And I just don't think he's skating great right now.
Yeah.
But they need him to produce. And right now, that line with Mikko and Granlund is not producing at all. And but then, you know, he makes unbelievable plays. Like, you look at the game-winning shorthanded goal in Montreal the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all are giving Zucker, and it was an incredible burst of speed and move to beat Charlie Lindgren on the game-winning goal there. But the play that Granlund made to create that rush was absolutely special. You know, Brodin pops the puck out, and it was Brodin or Suter. And you know, again, he goes into a battle with two guys, is able to get that puck into the neutral zone. Then he's coming into the neutral zone, and he, again, not skating well, lifts the guy's stick and then slides it with a poke to Jason that even surprised Zucker. I mean, it's just a tremendous play, and that's what Granlin has the ability to do that few players on this team does.
Any, you think there are any internal regrets trading Alex Tuch?
You know, I'm sure that deep down in the back there, they're just like, are you kidding? Because I could tell you this, you know, I think they all had a lot of belief in Tuch, but I do think that they, and it's still early, but I think that there was a lot of belief inside the team that the pace that he played with, his skating, was not going to make him the NHL player that they originally projected him to be, that big power forward. And obviously Tuch has gotten off to a great start with the Vegas Golden Knights. And
Golden Knights, 10-5-1.
You know, and then when you realize that they did this because they wanted to make sure that they didn't lose any of their defensemen, and then their defensemen were struggling earlier in the year.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I think that, you know, in a first month, hindsight's 20-20, and it doesn't look good. But if the defensemen can play the way that they have against Montreal and Philly, and can bring that consistently all year long, you see why they did it.
When does Stalock get some run?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, as you know, he was going to play in Toronto, and then he had to come home.
Right.
And then I really think that he was actually going to come back and maybe even play in Philly, but because Dubnyk gets the shutout in Montreal, they come back with him.
I thought he was playing in Philly.
Yeah.
He might play tonight.
Hey, do you?
He might.
You might.
Well, he texted me yesterday wondering if today was Vox in the Box, and I said no, and he said lame. So
I would think coming off back-to-back shutouts that Dubnyk would get the start tonight.
Yeah,
for sure. But, you know, you have a division game against Nashville coming up, and maybe in Boudreaux's mind, he's like, I want to go with Dubnyk in the division game.
So, Alex played well at Nashville late in the season last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the team lost 3-0 or something, or 2-0, something
like that. It makes
sense.
You know, and I think that you're going to probably want Dubnyk in Washington. But so he's got to get some games, though. They've got a ton of games coming up, and you got to play him, and he's playing great.
My man, thanks for coming by.
Anytime.
Michael Russo, Russo Radio, The Athletic, theathletic.com. Subscribe, as 9 to noon does, KFAN.com. Keyword athletic, save 20%. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, next.
You're listening to PA.
They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Man. Here comes...
On the Fan.
Programming on the Fan, brought to you in part by TruStone Financial.
Florio.
Oh, please. Oh, my gosh. There's something wrong with you.
Florio.
It was driving me crazy.
Football Feast.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports Radio, NBC's Football Night in America joins 9 to noon now. Michael, good morning, and I'd like to ask you a Vikings-related question that ties into TV. Are you ready?
No.
What do you think of this? The Vikings play the Carolina Panthers in 4 games. The Carolina Panthers employ current injured tight end Greg Olsen, but he most likely will be playing when the Vikings go to Charlotte. Greg Olsen is doing some work with Fox TV. Greg Olsen tentatively is scheduled to be a sideline analyst for the Vikings-LA Rams game at US Bank Stadium this weekend. What do you think of all that?
I wouldn't let him into the production meeting, that's for sure.
Right.
That's for damn sure.
Right.
Right?
But do you think he even should be tied to the sidelines and or the game? And, you know, from a production meeting standpoint, which would transpire on a Friday at Winter Park, the team facility, into a Sunday game, with the play-by-play guy, the analyst, and the other sideline individual, he would be privy to all of that steam, you know?
Yeah. No, hey, look, I don't know how this came to be. I hadn't thought of that until you just mentioned it. But if I was the Vikings, I would say he's not welcome on our sideline.
Right.
And if I was the Rams, I would say he's not welcome on our sideline because they may play them in the playoffs.
Right.
He's going to pick up stuff. He's a smart guy. He's going to pick up stuff via this assignment that is going to help him. And I like Greg. Don't get me wrong. I like Greg, but for competitive reasons, I don't know why in the hell anyone would agree to this.
Absolutely agree. Local fans were upset with you because you predicted the Vikings would lose 3 in a row.
First of all, I don't care.
Ooh,
I love all the locals, but if they're upset, I mean, somebody is always upset with me for some reason. I don't care if somebody's upset with me. So why do you even feel compelled to say that?
Well, because I was asked to by several people via email and or Twitter, and They're like,
okay, point taken. You're upset with me. What's your point?
They're like, go get him, Paul, but I'm not exactly the go get him type. But
No, not directly. You'll do it passive-aggressive style by mentioning the fact that other people want you to come get me, but you don't have the balls to come get me.
Well, what led to the bad prognostication?
What do you mean?
Well, because
Have you never gotten anything wrong? Are you right every week?
No, of course
Wait a minute. If you were right every week, the Vikings would have won the last 19 Super Bowls. They would have never lost a single game. Right?
Yeah, the worst prognostication I've had in my football-loving career was in 2008. For two segments, I was impassioned that Aaron Rodgers was nothing but a big box score and lacked the inherent leadership skills Brett Favre possessed. Now, how was that? I mean, that's the worst prediction you ever can make.
That didn't turn out very well.
Well, I mean, we beat Washington. You know, now we got the L.A. Rams this weekend. Then we go to Detroit on a short week. So, what do you, our lot in life? What do you think?
Well, look, I'm going to, the last thing I'm going to do is back off, simply because I got one game wrong. The Rams are very good, and they're coming to town this week, and then it's three straight road games for the Vikings. So, The best development on Sunday would have been the Lions losing to the Browns, because there's still only two games separating the Vikings and the Lions, and with the Lions winning in Minnesota, it all comes down to Thanksgiving. Even if the Vikings beat the Rams, I don't know who the Lions play this weekend, but they don't have a tough schedule the rest of the way. I think they play the Bears in Chicago. Okay,
yes.
They could lose that. I mean, if they play the way they did on Sunday against the Browns, maybe they will lose that game.
Right.
But losing to the Lions on Thanksgiving, I think, as a practical matter, ends the hunt for the NFC North Championship, unless the Lions otherwise fall apart, because they have a much easier stretch than the Vikings do. Atlanta has recovered somewhat.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that was Dallas bad or Atlanta good. Carolina, when they're firing on all cylinders, they're tough to stop. And I know that the whole Mike Zimmer knows how to stop Cam Newton thing, but it's a tough stretch of four games. And if the Vikings get through that stretch, 9-4, 10-3, then, you know, 12-4, 13-3 is a possibility, because I think the last three games are all winnable.
So if we win the next two, Rams here at Lions on Thanksgiving, where you have a radio show that morning and I'm joining, will you declare Minnesota not only Kings of the North, but Super Bowl contenders?
No, not Super Bowl contenders.
If we win the next two and we're 9-2?
No.
Why?
Because I've seen this movie too many times, right? You know, Rocky is 40 years old. I've seen Rocky plenty of times. Okay. I know how it ends.
We ain't Apollo Creed.
Ever since the Vikings, Apollo Creed wins in Rocky.
That's a fair point.
Ever since the Vikings made it to the Super Bowl in 1976, the game against the Raiders where I think it was Brent McClanahan fumbled at the goal line, and it would have been a very different game if he hadn't. Potentially, it's been different variations of the same theme. Now, some years it's over early. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of 3-13s. Mm-hmm. Some years it's over late. There's a couple of heartbreaking overtime losses in the NFC Championship game. But ultimately, the movie ends the same way. And I'm just, you know, I don't know why I keep watching it, because I know how it's going to end. So no, I don't view them as Super Bowl contenders.
What are we getting into with the Rams this Sunday?
Well, a team with an incredibly improved offense. It's partially the absence of Jeff Fisher and partially the addition of Sean McVay. And a defense that has enough talented players to be very good and a coordinator who can make it great. I mean, they are as balanced as any team in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how thoroughly they've been tested this year. I mean, the Texans were beating them in their own building 7-6 late in the first half before Tom Savage started doing Tom Savage things. But, you know, it's a team that will make you pay for your mistakes offensively and defensively. And you've just got to come out and be methodical and do your thing. Play your game. And but what a showdown this is. Who would have dreamed 7-2 versus 7-2? I think it's the game of the week.
I have immense respect for the L.A. Rams, not only for the turnaround. You go into Dallas when Ezekiel Elliott is playing and you win. That's nice. Scored 27 on Jacksonville's defense, and if Cooper Kupp doesn't drop a pass with like 5 seconds to go in the game, they beat the Seattle Seahawks. So we'll see how this whole operation executes
in the House of Pain
this weekend.
This could be the completion. We've seen several of these this year, this bizarre round robin where Minnesota beat Washington in their building. Washington beats the Rams in their building, and now the Rams come beat the Vikings in their building.
Yeah, we'll find out, right? What do you think of their coach, Sean McVay, 31 years of age?
Well, I think that we better get used to saying NFL head coach Sean McVay for the remainder of our lives.
Right.
Because he's 31, and he's going to be doing it for at least 35 years. And
damn.
35 plus 52 equals depressing as hell.
Does Case Keenum's season surprise you?
Yes.
Why?
Because he's playing really well, right? And this isn't, look, it's not like the NFL across the board opinion of Case Keenum. Maybe they should have had a higher opinion of him, and if he becomes a free agent again in March, they will. But look at Mike Glennon. He's getting $16 million this year, and he's riding the pine in Chicago.
Ooh.
Case got 1 year, $2
million, mm-hmm.
and he's getting it done. And you got to give him all the credit in the world. Case Keenum working with Pat Shurmur and Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs and Kyle Rudolph getting it done. I wasn't real happy with the back-to-back interceptions on Sunday.
Right.
One was just like a up in the air.
Yeah.
And that the you rarely see. Well, if you're going to jump a route on a throw to a tight end, you have done a poor job of communicating your intentions with the football. You jump a route on a tight end, that means they had plenty of time to figure out what's going on, and they jumped the route and off they went.
At ProFootballTalk.com right now, two of the top three stories. Talk of a John Gruden return heats up in Tampa. I mean, this is the annual ESPN give me a pay bump bit, right?
But he hasn't done it for a while.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, he hasn't done it for a while. Second of all, I don't know that they got money to give him a pay bump. And
right.
Thirdly, Ira Kaufman of JoeBucksFan.com, previously of the Tampa Tribune, the resident Tampa Bay Hall of Fame voter,
yes.
he said that Gruden misses Mike Tirico. Nothing against Sean McDonough, but Gruden misses Mike Tirico. And,
right.
And you've got the planets lining up where
wow.
His son Deuce could be lured from Washington to come down to Tampa. And look, I don't rule out Jay Gruden getting fired by Washington because it's Daniel Snyder. Any year that doesn't end in a playoff berth for Washington,
yeah.
I think potentially results in a new head coach. So it could be Jay, it could be Deuce, it could be John. It could be John getting up at 3:45 in the morning. If you haven't heard, just ask him.
Right.
And he likes Jameis. That's the key, too. He likes Jameis. He believes in Jameis. And that's what you need. If you're going to change coaches but you're committed to your quarterback, you better be darn sure your new coach likes your quarterback or your new coach is going to get rid of your quarterback and find a new one. But listen, it did not end well for Gruden in Tampa the last time around. And what struck me was when he was fired, Simeon Rice came out and called him a scumbag or something like that. Some non-profane but very strong term.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the former players rushed to his defense,
Jesus.
Which I thought was significant. And the reputation of Gruden back at the time was say one thing, do another. So we'll see how much he's changed over the last 8 years, if he does come back. But it feels like there's more to it this year than there's been in past years.
A top PFT right now.
Football feast.
It's about time you do that.
Jerry Jones says he's not backing off on Goodell extension. And then I saw...
there's a surprise.
Well, I saw a piece you wrote this weekend. I think you wrote it. Arthur Blank and Jerry Jones didn't talk to each other when the Falcons met the Cowboys this weekend. And then there's like another step where some owners may try to force him to give up ownership of the... I mean, what the hell's going on?
Well, look, he's received a cease and desist letter from the NFL's compensation committee. Arthur Blank is the chairman of it.
Yeah.
And they basically told him, knock it off with trying to disrupt and dispute this extension, because Jones, along with all other owners, voted unanimously back in May to authorize the compensation committee to do this deal. And that was a point we made when this all first bubbled up a few weeks ago on Football Night in America. I said his window was in May. That's when he only would have needed 9 total owners to keep this from going forward. He didn't do it. They all voted in favor of it. And now he's complaining about the process. He's complaining about the offers. He's complaining about this. They think he instigated Papa John's to go after the NFL in a quarterly earnings call from a couple of weeks ago where Papa John's blames its earning issues on the NFL, and they're really upset about that, because it's one thing to have an honest disagreement in the room with the door closed. It's another thing to take it public, and it's definitely another thing to instigate sponsors to make life more miserable for the NFL. So they're very upset with him. They've threatened him with fines, loss of draft picks, and a suspension. But there is talk, at least talk among some owners, of the nuclear option under Article 8 of the Constitution and bylaws to allow the commissioner to recommend to the executive committee the question of whether or not the franchise should be forfeited, which does not mean the Cowboys would go away. It means it would be a Donald Sterling situation where Jones would be forced to sell. But here's the thing. The NFL doesn't want any more of a mess than they already have. That would be a huge mess because it would be litigation for years, yep. And it would be a complete and total debacle. But they're very upset with Jerry Jones right now, and he says he's not going to back off, and this thing is going to continue to be a mess. And the one thing I agree with, Paul, and they screwed this up, I believe. Instead of giving the compensation committee advance approval to go do the deal, why not say go negotiate the deal and bring it back to us for approval? Why not do that?
Right.
You avoid all of this if you do it that way.
So Jerry's frustrated because of the Ezekiel Elliott thing, right?
Jerry, it was reported last week, and I'm told that it's accurate. Jerry is frustrated because he believes Roger Goodell lied to him, because he believes Roger Goodell told him that Ezekiel Elliott would not be suspended. Ooh. And then when he found out that Ezekiel Elliott was suspended, he became very upset.
Green Bay is alive and kicking. The question is for how long? What do you think?
Not for long. Not for long. I think that, look, they beat the Bears. Okay, big deal. I think that they're not built to last. Not without Aaron Rodgers. There's no way.
Does it make sense for the NFL to continue Thursday Night Football?
Well, it makes financial sense, right?
For all parties?
Yeah, it makes financial sense for all parties because you got $900 million over 2 years pouring into the NFL's coffers. You split that money with the players.
Yeah.
And it's it works out to about $7 million per team per year in salary cap space, which is an average of $132,000 per player.
Wow.
But if you look at it big picture, it's a reduction in percentage of the cap, and that's going to reduce by a commensurate percentage what's available for your quarterback, your receiver, your running back, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, it's become very popular to complain about Thursday Night Football. I think there are plenty of players out there who don't have a problem with it, but they don't have the occasion to come out and say, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Right? You've got, and I don't know whether it's a majority or a minority, but you have a vocal opposition to it. And I've asked players over the years what they think of it, and some say they don't like it, and some say they do. And I remember last year, I think it was Chad Greenway, when he was on PFT Live, I asked him what he thought of it as the Dallas game was approaching or as the Thanksgiving game was approaching. It was short week football. I said, what do you think of it playing on Thursday after playing on Sunday? He said, ask me on Friday.
Right.
Right, because if you win, you feel very differently about short week football.
Yeah, I bet you Sunday after we play the Rams,
yeah.
I bet you a majority of the team goes back to the facility and begins treatment that evening with the short week against the Lions.
Absolutely.
But when you get to this stage of the season, and people are frustrated and the pressure's high if you're winning a lot of games or losing a lot of games, the short week this stage of the season, physically and mentally, it legitimately becomes tedious.
But here's the thing. Thursday Night Football has been around since 2006 as a franchise. The NFL started it to help justify getting the dollars they were looking for per month for NFL Network. That's all it was. It's programming for NFL Network. It justifies charging more money because now, in addition to a couple of studio shows and NFL Films programming, we've got live football X times a year. So that's where it all came from. Starting in November, remember that was a big deal, second half of the year, Thursday Night Football.
Yep.
But for decades, Paul, you've had four teams per year mm-hmm. playing on a short week once a year on Thanksgiving. The Lions have done it every year. The Cowboys have done it every year. And you know what? They never complained once. And they've had every member of the Lions and every member of the Cowboys for 50 years has not complained about playing on that fourth Thursday in November. So look, a part of it is people just complain. I understand that it takes time to recover. But the argument against it is, the players will say, some will say, we have an easy work week in advance, and we have a mini buy on the back end.
Right.
So it balances out. So I get irritated when the NFL tries to say that it's actually better on Thursday night. That was an argument the commissioner tried to make when he was on with Colin Cowherd last December. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? It's not better. Just be happy if it's almost the same. And the argument in response to the health and safety issues is that the injury rate on Thursday is lower than the injury rate on Sunday. Well, that's not the point. The point isn't how many injuries happen during the game. The point is, how much sense does it make to put a guy out there who's just got the normal bumps and bruises, who is being subjected to 60 minutes of football before he's fully recovered? And I think the older the player is, the harder it is. So and here's the only way it goes anywhere, Paul. And this is not, I don't know anything about this. NBC only wakes me up for the unimportant meetings, but you've got this joint CBS-NBC venture to broadcast Thursday Night Football. It expires this year. What if CBS says, "Nah, we don't want it"? What if Fox says, "Yeah, we don't want it"? What if NBC says, "Yeah, we'll split it with somebody, but we want the whole thing"? What if ABC says, "No, we got enough problems"? If you don't have a network partner that's going to pay you it ends up being $450 million a year total for the package.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
Right.
Right? It goes away. It may go away. So the bottom line is, it may go away even if the NFL wants to keep it.
My man, thank you. I'll call you next week.
Later.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Next segment, is Zimmer really considering sitting Case Keenum against his former team?
That's a dumb question.
It's 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA.
Happy for the relationships and experiences, along with the joys of meeting superstars like PA, K-Fan.
On the Fan.
Programming On the Fan is brought to you in part by the good folks at Bradshaw and Bryant. You can experience Maui with the Bumper to Bumper Show. Book a once-in-a-lifetime package with defined destinations. It includes a six-night stay, airfare, excursions, live broadcasts, and more. Limited trips available, so act fast. Details, KFAN.com.
Case out of the shotgun. Takes the Pat Elf line snap. Fires right. Caught by Jarius Wright at the five. Weaves his way inside the five. Touchdown! Case Keenum just threw a career-best fourth touchdown with 12:22 to go in the third quarter. That one goes to Jarius Wright, and Minnesota leads 34-17. Shotgun first and 10 in Chargers territory. Teddy steps up, loops it, caught. Rudolph, five, touchdown, Vikings! Kyle Rudolph dropped the ball earlier in the game. The Chargers got three, so he comes right back and says, "I'll double that up, I'll score a touchdown, and give you the lead."
That's what the world is today.
The sound of peels are at an all time high. Winter is coming. Walking down with the heads in the sky. Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Is Mike Zimmer really considering sitting Case Keenum against his former team? Case Keenum, fifth year from Houston.
But they left him in at 11. They left too much time for Teddy. Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater.
Case Keenum wears number 7. Teddy pumps, dumps, touchdown, Vikings!
Case Keenum, touchdown!
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Is it lunacy to think Case Keenum may not play quarterback for the Vikings Sunday at the House of Pain and against the Los Angeles Rams? Let's dissect.
Looking at the press conference from yesterday, PA, some of the head coach's own words as we dissect. First off, how do you evaluate Case's performance from Sunday, Coach? You got the touchdowns, but then you got those two interceptions in the second half.
You know, the two turnovers were bad, and then back-to-back, and, you know, we got the game pretty much in hand. But the rest of the game, he played pretty darn good. He moved in the pocket well, threw the ball. Good. You know, I think, you know, he started slow in the last couple ball games, and then he started really fast in this game, and then the first half came back in the second half a little bit. But, he's a very excitable guy, and, he sometimes, you know, he gets off the reservation a little bit. He just has to, you know, I talked to him a little bit this morning about, you know, understanding the situation of the game and where we're at, and sometimes a throwaway is a good thing.
Tricky talker, 9 to noon here to handle it, with no blanket scenarios, but a prediction is forthcoming. Off what you just heard from the head coach, Mike Zimmer, and it makes it a tricky talker because there's a markedly better chance Teddy Bridgewater is the future quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings and Case Keenum is not. And when I say future, I mean 2018, 2019, and so on. Teddy is a polarizing figure who was a quarterback throwing for 14 touchdowns in 16 games. That's like .8 terrorism, but leading the, or assisting the team in winning a division. But off what you just heard about Keenum's interceptions and starting fast and stuff like that, into the Washington game out of the bye, and we discussed it extensively with offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur in the Vikings report yesterday, and there's more coming this week. They implored Case Keenum to do two things into the Washington game. Start faster, and we will help you with that by getting down the field with the passing game, and he did. Diggs 51 double move Josh Norman, and do a better job in the red zone. The Vikings were inside the 25 times, and they scored 5 touchdowns. So they asked that young man to do two things, and he came through. What's next?
What are you referring to when talking about playing better with a lead?
A little bit of it is the clock became our friend there. You know, we're in field goal range. We, you know, throw a bad interception. That one was probably worse than the second one. We're in field goal range. You know, we got a chance to go up by 3 scores, I guess, or 4, whatever it was. You know, at that point in time, the clock is kind of starting to be our friend now a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, using a little bit more time on the clock, understanding the situation, you know, the game's basically over if we just take care of things and take care of the football, continue to keep the clock running, continue to get first downs, things like that.
Oof. Major part of the talker. He wasn't perfect. Who is? Tom Brady? All right, cool. Greatest quarterback history of NFL. He wasn't perfect while throwing for a career-best 4 touchdowns. This is a major part of the talker because the interceptions were awful, quite honestly unacceptable, and nearly turned the game the way of the adversary. More on that momentarily.
Next, you've talked about developing a relationship with Sam Bradford, coach, since he's been here. Have you been able to do the same thing with Case Keenum?
You know, probably not to the extent of with Sam. But, you know, I won't tell you what I said to him today, but, you don't expect him to be the guy right away, but we have a good relationship. We talk all the time.
Oof. Struggling to describe and define the relationship he has with Case, but PA, we know it's all about the money question, right?
Case going to start this week.
I don't know. I haven't sat down and talked to everybody yet, so I'm going to wait until Wednesday.
Okay. Well, you know, right? You do know who's going to start.
For 2 more?
Like you said, you haven't spoken to anybody yet about who's the starting quarterback. Do you know who it's going to be?
Yes.
Would you like to tell us?
Why would I tell you and I haven't told anybody else?
Ooh. That's freaking meaty. And I was 2 rows behind Tom Pelissero of the NFL Media and NFL Network.com, Tom, when he asked the question. And Mike eyeballed him with the yes, and then took a little step to the left and eyeballed him with the why would I tell you when I haven't told anybody else. It wasn't uncomfortable, but it was tense. And that was a meaty part of the press conference yesterday, of course, heard on the Fan. Zimmer to the media, I'm not telling you guys before I tell the team, paraphrasing. My question, what the bleep does that mean? Case Keenum starts every single week. If Case absolutely is the quarterback into the Rams game, what is there to share with the team? And that was the prevailing question I had leaving yesterday.
Yeah.
If Case Keenum absolutely is the starter this week, the guy who has assisted in six wins, the guy who was requested to start faster, stretch the field, do a better job in the red zone, and came through in a road victory against a team, granted 4-4, not the greatest thing in the world, Kirk Cousins, quality quarterback, Preston Smith, Ryan Kerrigan. I mean, they got some players. I mean, Washington beat the Rams. I mean, to a majority of people with whom I chat about the NFL off the radio show, the Rams is the cat's ass. I mean, Aaron Donald this, Michael Brockers, Tremaine Johnson, some rookie at safety who's getting better game by game, some rookie pass rusher got his first sack. They're on him now. Andre Whitworth is Walter freaking Jones. Jared Goff is MVP type. Todd Gurley is Adrian. Okay, cool. We'll find out this weekend where the whole thing stands. But through all of that, beating Washington on the road, quite honestly, as a Vikings fan, I think people will appreciate this. No matter how good or bad we are, those are games in the past that we have lost, including last year 26-20, where it's a tricky 50-50 game, and for whatever the reason, the Vikings are not good enough to get over the hump. The Vikings were good enough to get over the hump in that game, largely due to their quarterback, Case Keenum, with a career-best 4 touchdowns passing. Now, I'm shoving all my chips in on Case Keenum playing Sunday.
Okay.
And I'm not, I just think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I'm not, if I'm wrong, then let's go Teddy. All right. I'm too much time for Teddy. Touchdown Teddy. Let's go. I'm not a fan of experimenting off a 5-game winning streak and playing for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And using Bridgewater this weekend would be experimenting.
It would be.
No matter how much you've seen in practice the last 3 weeks where maybe it started slowly and it's gotten a lot better of late. Okay, that's cool, man. As 9 to Noon has stated, the key to security with Case Keenum, the key with Case Keenum is ball security and not doing stupid things and giving the ball to the other team. This is where the talker gets tricky.
Yes.
Sunday at FedEx Field, he did that twice and both were terrible. Maybe Zimmer feels, and I can't say, if he does feel this way, I can't say he's wrong. It's an opinion. I mean, we're all right until it bears its fruit. Maybe Zimmer feels we have squeezed as much from this proverbial lemon as we can get. Mm. Maybe Zimmer feels that is as good as it's going to be, and those picks are as bad as it's going to be, and that part is going to get worse as the stakes get higher, the heat gets hotter, and the games get tougher. But know this. It would be a bold take and a bolder move for Mike Zimmer to usurp Case Keenum in this game against his former team and go with Teddy Bridgewater.
It's a season-defining move. You know, if it's still a mystery to anybody, the one thing about Mike Zimmer that I've found to be quite interesting is just how emotional he can be in some of his decisions. And when you hear that press conference yesterday, I hear a guy... I shouldn't say it physically pained him, but in a way, it was difficult for him to compliment Case. And it's almost one of those things where he wants every win he can get, and he wants to win a Super Bowl. He wants to win a Super Bowl with Teddy. He adores Teddy. And
that intrinsic emotional side of this talker, I believe, is real, but as the pragmatic approach to the business of the NFL goes, and there's a lot of business that goes into winning games, that has to be jettisoned.
I couldn't agree more. However, with that said, and you could hear it in his voice, he is looking for a reason to put Teddy in that game. That's what I get from it. I see a situation where the guy did throw a career-high 4 touchdowns, but you could argue he's not going to throw 4 touchdowns every game. Is he going to make stupid decisions like he did on those 2 interceptions every single game?
Right.
And at some point, against a better team, they'll feast on those turnovers and those bad decisions, and we will lose.
Right.
And as a guy that adores Teddy Bridgewater as head coach of my team,
yeah,
if I'm seeing what I need to see in practice and I'm going to go up or down in the course of battling, in quote-unquote, in the NFL season, I want to win or lose with the guy that I adore.
Okay.
With the guy that did things for me, and he put our team in a position to win a playoff game. He was front row seats in that cold day in January at TCF Bank Stadium, watched Teddy get that PI on Cam, watched him set up for a 27-yard field goal that went the wrong way.
But we're making the assumption this Bridgewater is that Bridgewater.
I agree.
And see, the tricky part of this talker, I'm very fond of Teddy Bridgewater. And I want Teddy Bridgewater to be the lead vocalist for this band for 10 years. And I would love nothing more than to watch the Minnesota Vikings win a Super Bowl and have Teddy Bridgewater hoist the Lombardi Trophy.
Yes.
I would love that. But as the business of the NFL goes, you know, if we're really going to slice and dice our way between what is happening now, what is working, and what potentially may be, then it's fair to look back at what was.
Mm.
And the was 2015. And sure, Case Keenum had a couple of awful throws in the Washington game. In the game at London, he and this has happened. You know, there are receivers, specifically Stephon Diggs, streaking down the field who would get easy touchdowns, and Keenum is either missing them or he's going a different direction.
Correct.
But you know what? I saw that a fair amount in 2015 with too much time for Teddy.
I did as well.
And I've said it 8 million times with all due respect to all involved. Mike Wallace should have had minimum 9 touchdowns in 2015. Cordarrelle Patterson and Adam Thielen were missed on touchdowns. So it happens to basically everybody.
Mm-hmm.
To some, it happens more. To Brady and some of the best, it happens less. You know, another side of the talker is Bridgewater never has played a regular season snap in Pat Shurmur's offense.
Right.
So how significant and important is it what Case Keenum does at the line of scrimmage, specifically when it got hot at FedEx Field and we needed to convert third downs? Or specifically, we needed second downs to be so good that our third downs were third and one, third and two.
Yeah.
And if you remember, I think we converted 3 third downs on the possession that led to the Forbeth 53-yard field goal. And I'm pretty sure all of them were third and very short.
Well, at least one of them was a brilliant Case play. I can't remember the completion he made, but it was a brilliant Case play on one of those.
So I'm here with you, Rube Nation. We are in this thing. Can I get a witness? The power of the purple compels us forever. And it very well could be Teddy Bridgewater as quarterback for this team for many, many years. Quite honestly, I am flabbergasted that this is a talker right now. I mean, I'm absolutely blown away that at what was said yesterday, that why would I share with you when I haven't shared with the team? I just don't understand what there is to share. Maybe a change is coming.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword money to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info.
Standard data and message rates apply.
That's money to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
The king in the north. The king in the north. Yes!
Fan.
Ain't nothing bad with a little loose booty on a talker Tuesday. This is 9 to noon.
And nothing bad about tweeting at KFAN1003 with the hashtag MVP table promo. You can win front row tickets to PA and Charge, the Friday football feast, Buffalo Wild Wings, Oakdale, this Friday the 17th. Got to be 21 plus to enter. No purchase necessary. KFAN.com. Keyword contest. Hey, hey, hey,
hey. Good morning, Johnny Krasinski. How are you?
Good morning, PA. What's happening, my man?
John Krasinski, The Athletic and TheAthletic.com, right?
That's the new address. Things are going great so far. Thanks for everyone for their support.
Yeah. Johnny Krasinski, The Athletic, TheAthletic.com, Vikings, Gophers basketball, Timberwolves. Same guy, right?
Same guy, yep. The same jack of all trades, master of none. So do what I can, and We have some great content up. We'll have a little Teague Rubio breakdown a little bit later today off of last night's game, which I know is a lot of red meat for Wolves fans right now. So we're staying busy. Things are great.
Johnny Krasinski, jack of all trades, front row Zimmer press conference yesterday. A couple of times he was peppered with it. Tom Pelissero, NFL media, the last. What's the quarterback bid? Do you know? Yes. What is it? Why would I tell you before I tell the guys? Just your quick Twitch thought on all of that.
Yeah, I wrote a story about it yesterday that's on theathletic.com right now. And to me, what I took away from it, PA, was I don't know that Case Keenum is not going to start or that Teddy is going to start on Sunday against the Rams, but it sure just feels like that we're building toward that point at some time this season. I mean, the way that Mike Zimmer talked about Case Keenum and needing to kind of dial it back a little bit, and when you're playing with a lead, kind of be smarter, be a little more careful with things. Kind of throwing out the caveats of he played well, but those two turnovers were really bad. And to me, like when I think about Teddy, and we don't know what he's going to be when he does come back, but one thing that we do know that he was when he was healthy was pretty smart with the football. He wasn't the gunslinger, I don't think, that Case was.
Right.
But I think he's a little bit more of a guy that you can rely on not to throw those big interceptions. And with a defense like they have right now, it just seems like Zimmer and this team is gradually building toward that moment where Teddy is back in there. I don't know what you think.
I have all of my emotional chips in the middle of the table this weekend on Case Keenum.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, I'm flabbergasted that it's kind of a talker at this moment. I'm with you in that maybe it has the right to have more talkability as the season rolls on. I'm not a fan of experimenting from 7-2. The picks were awful, and I also recognize a head coach has the right to have the instinct that we've squeezed as much out of this proverbial lemon as we can get, and it's going to go downhill from here. Now, if that's his take and that's his move, it's a bold take and a bolder move.
Yeah, I agree 100% because they have won 5 in a row, and Case played well in that game. I mean, 4 touchdowns, 300 yards passing. You'd take that, I think, at most, almost every game if you could get that from Case or Teddy or anyone else. I mean, yeah, the two interceptions were difficult to watch and to stomach, but overall, the plays that he made down the field, all of those things, factor into he deserves to get another chance. I do believe that, and I know that kind of some readers and tweeps and people out there were getting mad at me thinking I was the one fanning the flames about a controversy, and it's not me, it's the head coach who is kind of throwing this out there and really just kind of bringing some other food for thought into this conversation, leaving the door open for Teddy. So it's not anything that I think it should be one way or the other. I'm just trying to read what the head coach is saying, and maybe there's a method to his madness. Maybe he's just trying to confuse the Rams and keep everyone on their toes, but it just sure seems like the way that he evaluates Case Keenum is that there leaves something to be desired, and we know his affection for Teddy and what he's seen him come through and what he feels his future is here. And so I just think that at some point, whether it's this week or 3 weeks from now, I think we're going to see Teddy in there and getting a shot.
Three titillating moments on the Timberwolves, minutes that is, on the Timberwolves with Johnny Consonant. He covers the Timberwolves, Gophers basketball, much more for The Athletic and theathletic.com. I subscribe. You can subscribe at KFAN.com, keyword athletic. Save 20%, $3 and change a month. Seriously, it's like a dime, 12 cents a day. So do it at KFAN.com, keyword athletic, and save 20%. Follow Johnny Krasinski like I do. Wolves crushed Utah last night. What'd you think of the game?
Yeah, I think they needed it after kind of the ugliness that we saw in Phoenix. And you're going to have games like that, especially in November of a long season. But I just really think that there were a lot of red flags in that Phoenix game that made you a little concerned about the progress that we were seeing, if there was any. But to come back and really handle the Jazz, who were certainly shorthanded with Rudy Gobert out, and they lost Gordon Hayward in free agency. Rubio is struggling. So I think they did what they had to do. Jeff Teague played well, really outplayed Rubio up and down the dial. And so what we really saw was kind of the Thibodeau vision for this offense. Jimmy Buckets has 10 assists and is the initiator off the wing. Jeff Teague hits 4 of 7 threes. He's catch and shoot, knocking down those open shots and not being the playmaker, but being the play finisher. And so that's why Tibbs got rid of Rubio, and that's why he brought in Jeff Teague. And so they need more consistency out of Teague in that area, but I thought that was kind of the carbon copy of what Tibbs wants out of his offense. And we saw it, and we saw it pretty successful last night.
Johnny Consonant, a dear friend of mine, Jimmy Knutson, is a season ticket holder. When I told him you would be on the presentation today, text me a question. I think it has merit. I need your opinion. There have been times, including last night, where the Wolves will have leads of like 20 points. Looks like game is well in hand. And bench guys are in. And then Tibbs will put starters back in, and it's like they're cold, and then the game evens out a little bit. Are you noticing that, and is it a problem?
Yeah, I am noticing that, and I do think he's playing with fire a little bit in terms of, you know, they were in front for 25, 26 points into the second half, and all of his starters played 37, 38, 40 minutes in that game. And ideally, you want the bench, especially guys like Bielitsa and Tyus Jones, who are playing well, to get some of that run and take some of that pressure and that playing time and that wear and tear off of the starters. And I do think that sometimes he does insert Towns back into the game, or Wiggins, or a few of the younger guys, and they say, well, we're up 15, we're up 20, we can kind of coast and get my numbers and get out of here with a win. And then all of a sudden it's a 12-point game and they're back in the meat grinder. That's happened a few times this year. I do expect that to even out as the season goes along. But it definitely has been an issue to this point, and I do think that's why Tibbs keeps going back to these guys late in games and saying, hey, man, you guys got to figure out how to finish this thing, how to kind of step on their necks and don't let them up. And right now we don't like, you know, that you're letting them back into games, so let's figure this thing out.
Johnny, thanks for the chat. Enjoy your day.
Thanks for having me, PA. Talk to you soon.
Johnny Krasinski, Johnny Consonant, The Athletic, theathletic.com. Pat Shermer with the Vikings Report around the corner. Paul Charchian in the Fantasy Pickup Joint 15 minutes from now.
Time now for the Vikings Report on The Fan. Presented by Quick Trip, the preferred convenience store of the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings offensive coordinator Pat Shermer joins PA after this from Quick Trip.
Programming on The Fan brought to you in part by Papa John's. Just chatted with John Krasinski about it. Wolves beat down on the Utah Jazz last night. You get paid off on Papa John's pizzas today. Half off large and extra large pizzas with the code WOLVESWIN.
Busy final hour 20, 9 to noon. Churchy, 7 minutes from now, Fantasy Pickup Joint. Bow Hunting Burnsy, 15 minutes from now, Gophers football, college football. And highfalutin sports agent Blake Barrett's Institute for Athletes in studio 35 minutes from now. But first, news du nord.
I was hoping we get to listen to the chorus, but I get it.
I like the song.
We'll find out who our starting quarterback is.
We're about to do a parody up in this thing, aren't we?
Okay.
We're about to do a parody.
Yeah, we are do a parody.
News Why you gotta sing on the radio and make me think parody? I mean, come on, man. It's like in the arsenal of Pat Shermer's playbook, you doing parodies is like one of his best plays. But funny, we never run the plays and haven't run Mungo Jerry since August.
Well, here's the thing, though. If it's one of your best plays, you use it in big spots to get the big payoffs.
Okay.
I'll make another. I guess
that's one way to look at it.
I'll make another freaking parody.
Vikings are 7-2, and we montaged yesterday with You Make My Dreams Come True.
I love that song.
What about You Make My Team 7-2? Ooh, 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 ooh. You Make My Team 7-2. I'm trying, man.
No, you are.
Hey, I'm just trying to get that people meter to move and win on a daily basis, man. I'm sorry.
Let's do it. I'm on it. News du Nord brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. Live racing, not till the spring. That stinks. But poker, blackjack, table games all year round.
Can you get a parody done in an hour? Like, Teddy beat the Jets. Teddy!
I still have that somewhere around here. God, how good would it be to have Teddy and the Jet back together again? Ugh. CanterburyPark.com for all event details.
Number one.
Let's start with this. Before the Wild kickoff or the puck is dropped this evening, let's check in with a teaser on our own Mike Wobshaw's Skull Stories.
I remember so much about the day. I remember my roommate driving me to the airport. We were listening to Lenny Kravitz on the radio. I remember it was the Are You Gonna Go My Way album. I remember it was a light rain. I remember sitting on the plane.
Who the heck is this?
And just thinking, this is unbelievable. I'm actually going to the place that drafted me because it's such a big moment in your life.
Tonight's Skull Stories guest, former Vikings running back.
Next.
Retired early. I think he went back to school.
Oh, Bob Smith.
Bob Smith.
Oh, okay.
Robert Smith.
Yeah, that's
Vikings
Bob Smith.
Running back.
Should have known.
And you can hear that preceding this.
Here's Dumble with a shot. That deflects wide.
About a Wild parody.
Scores! Zucker took the shot from back behind the net. May have hit the Philadelphia goaltender and came back in. If it does, that's Zucker's sixth straight goal here for Minnesota.
Well, if we get number seven tonight,
hey,
there should be a parody.
You familiar with the Cletus Band Atlanta Rhythm Section?
Obviously, I am not.
Okay. Atlanta Rhythm Section had a very popular song many years ago. The coach of the Wild is Bruce Boudreau. Let's call him Brucey. The song was Hold On Loosely, Don't Let Go. You familiar with that song?
Yes.
Hold on, Brucey. Don't let go.
Oh, that's perfect.
Hold on, Brucey. See?
I'm in on that.
I'm just trying to win over here.
I'm in on Jason Zucker. So it's a two-part thing. It's awesome that Jason Zucker has been scoring at the clip that he has been.
It was Covenant Cleanup, sponsored by Crickets. It was 38 Special, not Atlanta Rhythm Section. 38 Special
okay.
That did Hold On, Brucey.
No, we can take a peek at that.
Hell yeah!
There we go! The last six goals by the Wild have all come by way of Jason Zucker.
Yeah.
That is the first time since 2004 that's happened.
Yeah.
Tonight, the Wild and Philadelphia Flyers, it's a rematch from Saturday's game in Philly.
Sounds
that
exciting.
That comes to XL Energy Center. Puck drop at 7 p.m., and Dubnyk's been playing exceptionally well. But if Jason Zucker scores the first goal of the game, he would tie a record set in 1921. Hasn't been done since 1991. Seven consecutive goals.
Yeah.
The problem is, if you're a negative, you might wonder what all the other players are doing at this
right.
stage. What are the other guys up to? Because we know Dubnyk's
yeah.
keeping the puck out of the net, and we know Jason Zucker's scoring. What about the other guys?
Have you perchance heard that when the Wild go on the road, Jason Zucker is succeeding because he gets a fair amount of sleep?
Yeah, I have heard that that theory.
I've heard that too. I mean, like Zucker, hold on, Brucey, don't let go.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
You think it's not?
Before we get to our special guest,
winter's coming.
Hoops, go for hoops.
Yeah, Jordan Murphy though. Was pretty sweet.
Okay. Let's get to Gopher Hoops here and play a highlight.
Yeah. You watched the game, I didn't.
I did watch the game.
The outlet comes to McBrayer. Hill one bounce to Washington. Good between the leg dribble. Splits a double team up off the window. No good. Murphy got his hands on the rebound but couldn't control it. And Watson comes over. Then Washington steals it from behind. Isaiah Washington finds it trailing McBrayer. Into the paint. Shot. Yes! And a foul.
Well,
Watson commits the foul.
Grim?
The Gophers have a three-point play
grim.
Chance.
It sounds different than AM.
Three.
Yeah, he does. But he sounds better on our sister station, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130.
With producer Sam Sansevier.
14th overall ranked Golden Gopher Hoops beats Providence. It was kind of a cool bit last night if you're into history and such. So you have the Gavitt tip-off games, which are in honor of the late Dave Gavitt, former coach and AD of Providence, first commissioner of the Big East. He actually was a committee member that helped put together the Olympic Dream Team in 92. But Rick Pitino put Providence in a Final Four in 87. Richard Pitino went to college there.
Mm-hmm.
Wolves drafted Chris Dunn a year ago. And Gopher Hoops took over in the second half. That audio, you can hear all their games on KTLK AM 1130 or with the iHeartRadio app. You're familiar with the name Jordan Murphy, correct?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the hell, because he's always been, you know, mid-teens in points. You can expect maybe a double-double from him, etc.
Yeah.
This kid is an absolute monster right now. 23 points.
I saw your tweets last night, and I read the recap and looked at the box score, and he looked like he was of the beastly ilk.
Now, something happened over the summer, man. I mean, he might be the best player on a team that looks like a badass team right
now. In college basketball, period. I mean, seriously, Kentucky and or Duke would want nothing to do with him right now. Excuse me. Would not be able to attain him right now. I can't wait to play Kentucky and or Duke in the Final Four to watch what Jordan Murphy does against, like, the new age Gorgie Jang.
That's going to be unbelievable.
Niagara and the Purple Eagles come to the barn tomorrow. That's at 7 p.m. again, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130.
P.A. and Charch.
Hi, Charchy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
What's going on there, Charchy? You do you think just quickly? I mean, because you follow things closely, even though you don't go to press conferences. Do you think we really have like a Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater thing brewing into this Rams game?
No, and I don't know why Zim has tried to provide one, or maybe it was not intentional. But no, I mean, you know, you don't bench a quarterback that the team's winning with, a quarterback who had a perfect passer rating through up until his first interception. He was literally perfect. And so I just think there's a real scenario here where the team seriously contemplated making a change. And I don't know why Zim decided to fuel that fire by, you know, not making it clear who was his obvious starter was. So very strange to me. Do you see it anything really any way different than that?
Partially, simply because Mike left it open. Yeah. I have to give it merit. And I'm, you know, I'm a little flabbergasted that it is a talker specifically into this game. Then you got the Lions game on a short week. So it's very difficult to get a new guy going in a short week.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I guess we'll...
So do you, maybe the only thing that I could think of that as I was trying to put this together a little bit in my head yesterday was, you know, he's seen Teddy in practice. Is it possible that Teddy's just been lights out in practice and he's been so good and we aren't seeing it and so much better than Case fueling it?
I would say no, because the backup does not get requisite reps in practice to be that eye-opening.
Yeah.
My gut feeling is it is an inherent instinct and trust factor the head coach has with one guy and does not with the other. So,
but that goes against typical coaches who are very reticent to change anything that's working.
Right.
You know, I think to a fault. You know, NFL coaches are very change averse if anything's working, almost to a level of superstition. So I find it, I find it very, very confounding that he fueled the fire on this.
Paul Charchy and fanball.com, at Paul Charchy and via Twitter, co-host of the Friday Football Feast, which this Friday is at Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale. Buffalo Wild Wings Oakdale for the Friday Football Feast, 9 to noon. All right, these Rams coming to town. This Rams offense, highest scoring in the NFL. Has it been a fantasy feast all season?
Well, yes and no. They are on pace to beat out the greatest show on turf in points scored, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, that's remarkable in and of itself. But they have faced a lot of really sketchy defenses over the course of this season. And when they're playing, you know, they've got Indianapolis, they've had San Francisco, Arizona, the Giants, Houston, those teams they have absolutely had their way with. And in their defense, they've done okay against other teams as well. But, you know, Jacksonville, 21 points, Seattle, 22 points. The Vikings are arguably better than those defenses, Paul. And so I still think 15 points against Washington. I think we don't know that the Rams are a great team against good defenses yet. And I think the Vikings are going to stymie and challenge Jared Goff and his offense in ways that they have not had to face this year.
90 seconds for your top shelf pickups. Go.
It's at the running back position, Paul, where there's a ton of guys to for fantasy owners to go get this week. It's always hard to get running backs. Rex Burkhead, his touches have increased in three straight weeks. He's averaged 12 touches and 70 total yards the last two games. Go get him for the Patriots. Danny Woodhead coming off the shelf this week. This will be his first game back. I think he immediately replaces the mundane Buck Allen. The Packers are going to be without Aaron Jones, and there's a pretty good chance that Ty Montgomery's not going to be ready to go, or his rib injury is going to be such that he'll be highly limited.
Yeah.
Jamal Williams, Paul, big-bodied, straight-ahead runner, broke a bunch of tackles last week against Chicago, moved some piles last week, potential goal line guy there. And then lastly, Samaje Perine is your new kind of starting running back for the Redskins. As we all saw here, Rob Kelly got knocked out of the game. And they just won't give Thompson a big workload. They just, I think Jay Gruden wants to keep using him sparingly and it just could sort of pick their spots. And so Perine actually didn't flash last week against the Vikings. He averaged 4 yards per carry, but that's half a yard better than the Vikings give up on average. They're a 3.5 yard per carry team. So I think Perine's actually got plenty of upside here and somebody you could go target too.
Love you. See you Friday.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
BA in charge. Friday, Buffalo Wild Wings, Oakdale for the Friday football feast. Derek Stevens via Twitter. Are you ready, Nordo?
I'm ready.
Hold on, Bruce. Don't let go. If your face gets redder, it's going to explode. Hold on, Bruce.
I always love that one.
Well done.
Can you have a parody by 1110? Something on Case Keenum and Teddy?
Why don't you...
We traded Teddy to the Jets.
You're normally pithy, but I'd like you to be long-winded with Ryan Burns, our next guest, and I will try to produce a Hold On Brucey parody.
Appreciate you. College football, Bo Hunting, Burnsy next. News du Nord, courtesy of Canterbury Park and CanterburyPark.com. Paul Allen, Talker Tuesday, KFAM Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios. Good morning.
I don't really answer preschool questions.
On the Fan.
Went up high for it!
Beaver shot still. Connor Rowe to the quarterback. They're milking the clock here. 3:30 and counting. Kobe McCrary, the running back. On third and three. High snap. The handoff is to McCrary. He breaks into the secondary. He might go. 30, 20, 10. Touchdown. His third of the day. A 7-touchdown day for the Golden Gophers.
7th heaven. Sky Yuma.
Baby, I just don't get it.
Good morning, Bo Hunter.
How are you?
Bo Hunting Burnsy, Oakdale's Ryan Burns, Gopher Illustrated, publisher, member, subscriber, contributor, president, at Ryan Burns, MN via Twitter, at Ryan Burns, MN via Twitter. Bo Hunting Burnsy is what we call him in the business. Your squad, your college football squad, killed the Huskers. What impressed you?
The offense came to play. Now, if you told me that Minnesota was going to put up 54 points after scoring a combined 20 the previous 2 weeks, I would have laughed you off the Bryan and Heating Cooling Studios stage there.
Nice.
And Minnesota's offense was just extremely efficient. And this Husker defense is extremely bad. That was the worst I've seen Nebraska play in the last month. They just had guys out of position consistently, and the collegiate Minnesota moving company was able to just dominate all day. That's how you put up over 400 yards of rushing on the ground, 6 rushing touchdowns. And then you saw Demaryius Crofton, I think, take the next step. He'd been getting better each and every week, but now you're able to kind of see that with some results in terms of points. I wasn't exactly expecting him to go for a 183-3, breaking the Marquise Gray rushing record for Minnesota. But the way he was able to run speed option, run read option, able to make a couple men miss, it was a very good day for Minnesota overall with how efficient that offense played.
Where do you need me to start, Laura or Mike Daniels?
Mike Daniels.
Well, Mike Daniels, he's like my immediate high-level hook with Bryan Heating and Cooling and Bryant.com. Do you have a furnace on the fritz? I mean, you dropped Bryan Heating and Cooling unsolicited during the Bo Hunting Burnsy segment, which indicates in a sidewinding way you must need a new furnace.
I know Abbott may or may not be listening, and I'm always trying to give a plug in when we can for UPA.
Will Demaryius Croft be the quarterback here next season?
That's a great question, and one that I don't think I have an answer to right now, because the way he's been playing is the way that, you know, I kind of thought he was going to be able to play throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Again, he's a very inexperienced quarterback, someone that is in collegiate start going into number five this weekend when the Gophers head down to Evanston to take on a white-hot Wildcat squad. Mm-hmm. But he's getting better, and that's what you want to see out of a young quarterback. And this is why I had been really trying to get folks to get behind Demaryius Croft, because now he does have the potential to have two more years here in a Golden Gopher uniform, especially when you look at that Nebraska performance. I know that, again, the stats don't tell the whole story, 9 of 15 on the day for 105 passing yards. Mm-hmm. He had two throwaways and four drops. So, again, if you take those six throws out, he's 9 of 9. We're talking about a much better day for Minnesota. But I think there's a real possibility of that. Now we're going to have to see how he does against two ranked opponents here, the Northwestern Wildcats, and then the Badgers come to town for senior day in about a week and a half's time. But I think there is a real shot. Now we're going to have to see what Minnesota signs in this 2018 class, how the redshirt Tanner Morgan, PJ Flex handpicked guy to come over from Western Michigan in that recruiting class, how he battles in there. And we're going to have to see how it all plays out. But I think the way Demaryius's been progressing is exactly what you want to see from a sophomore quarterback. Now, it's not going to get any easier, I can assure you of that, against Northwestern and Wisconsin. And I think that's where we're going to be able to see two more data points to kind of look forward to when you try to get into that spring recruiting or that spring quarterback battle.
You're an elite Big Ten mind. I'm not. But I have seen Northwestern play two or three times this season. One thing that impresses me about Northwestern is not only can it win low-scoring games like overtime 17-10 versus Iowa, if you got to get in a shootout with a ranked team like Michigan State, 70 combined points, or a 31-24 game against a bad Nebraska team, this team can win high or low-scoring games, you know?
They've really kind of figured something out here, because they start off the season 2-3. I mean, again, they did lose to a bad Duke team that's only won four games. But their other two losses there are against Wisconsin and Penn State, two pretty good teams. And now they've really figured it out. Five straight Big Ten wins. And you mentioned it, they're doing it in a bunch of different ways. And I think you can call them the Cardiac Cats, because in that five-game winning streak, they have three wins in overtimes, which is a kind of crazy way to look at things, considering how up in the air most overtimes are, especially in college football. But they are doing it in a multitude of different ways. And their quarterback, Clayton Thorson, has just been okay throughout Big Ten play, 8 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. He does have a rushing touchdown in 5 straight games. So once Northwestern gets into the red zone, we're going to have to see how Minnesota tries to combat that. But you mentioned it, and you're an elite. You're becoming an elite college football mind, PA. Look at you. Look how far we've come, that you're now being able to talk intelligently about the Northwestern Wildcats. I never thought I would see the day.
You've inspired me. And Saturday night, while laying at the Westin in Alexandria, Virginia, preparing for the Life Changer at FedEx on Sunday, was legitimately excited for Canes Irish. Got let down. Canes too good. So flipped over to all of fourth quarter Alabama, Mississippi State. Watched Mississippi State have the professional anxiety attack and lose that game, following it markedly more closely than I ever have. Quite honestly, Bo Hunter, because you inspired me.
This is the kind of things what happen when you listen to these kids from Oakdale. I know that you're going to be heading to Buffalo Wild Wings there on Friday. You better treat them well. But you watch some of that Alabama game.
Yeah.
And it's tough to say that Alabama is going to be able to be tested more than that. Again, that was their first true test of the season. That's a pretty good squad that Dan Mullen has there at Mississippi State. Now we're going to see how much longer Dan Mullen is there, considering Florida and Tennessee and some other jobs are open. But that Alabama squad is so deep top to bottom, and they're starting to find things on the offensive side of the ball to go with a pretty dang good defense, aren't they?
Bo Hunter, it's interesting you would go down that road, because I was thinking about that yesterday afternoon. I mean, Mike Riley legitimately or likely goner at Nebraska after the season is what I read online. Well, I didn't read a prediction that he was going to get fired, but like they're going to stick with him for the final two games. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, Brady Hoke already has gone to Tennessee, if you like Brady Hoke. And, I mean, do you think it almost behooves Nebraska to make a head coaching move now to try to get one of those cool names, one of a, you know, like a legitimate big-time candidate to help in Lincoln? Or do you think waiting is okay?
Well, this is going to be the second straight time a Minnesota victory over Nebraska gets a Nebraska coach fired. Folks will remember the Bo Pelini season where Minnesota goes down into Lincoln and wins for the first time there in 30-plus years. And then the following week, Bo Pelini is fired. And then Minnesota, again, we talk about their offense. They've been struggling. They had 20 total points the last 2 weeks, and they put up a 50-burger on the same Nebraska team, really putting the nail in the coffin for Mike Riley. I don't know how you bring him back, especially when the Nebraska athletic director is openly talking about his love for Central Florida head coach Scott Frost. There's a big Nebraska connection there. So how are you having an athletic director do that, and how are you going to keep Mike Riley in that same breath? So I don't really understand, again, bringing him back for the final two games, knowing that the inevitable thing is that you're going to let him go at the end of the season. Now, I think that's what Nebraska AD guy has said. He's not going to make a head coaching change during the season. Mm-hmm. But once that final game comes, and come Cyber Monday there, I think we're going to see a new Nebraska head coach, or at least Mike Riley fired, because they are going to have to get in this race for Scott Frost. That's
right.
Likely their top candidate, but they're going to have some top competition to try and beat out, because the Florida Gators are looking for a brand new head coach, and he's already down there at Central Florida. So it's probably going to get into a bidding war for Scott Frost, but it's going to be interesting to how much he ends up getting paid between the number of suitors he's actually going to have.
College football with Ryan Burns. In the business, we call him Bow Hunting Burnsy. Via Twitter, at Ryan Burns MN, runs GopherIllustrated.com. Become a subscriber, GopherIllustrated.com, for comprehensive Golden Gophers football, basketball, and much more coverage, GopherIllustrated.com. Clemson plays Miami December 2nd in the ACC title game. Clemson, national championship cred. Miami, plus 15 in the take give, which I think is second in the country. Oh, my God, how fantastic is this?
That's going to be a phenomenal game, especially, again, you watched a little bit of that of the Irish heading down in there to Miami, and the Canes just brought them behind the woodshed there. It's going to be a battle, and I'm excited to see it, because you obviously want to see great college football teams go once and one another, especially when they're peaking at such a high level. You look at Clemson, they're able to put a schlacking to Florida State last week. Again, Florida State is not the Florida State of old. This is a 3-6 football team, but this Clemson team just has one major slip up in Syracuse. Shout out to the Orangemen there. But this Cane squad is going to likely be undefeated heading into that Clemson game. And again, winner gets in the college football playoff when you're looking at the number 4 team heading into last week in Clemson and this undefeated Cane squad. It's going to be interesting to see, can Miami's defense continue to play as well as they have against this high-flying attack that the Clemson offense provides? That's going to be the big key for me.
Potentially dumb question at Twitter, but I'm going to fire it anyway. Mike Larson sent a tweet 1 minute ago. Paul, ask Bo Hunter why North Dakota State University is ranked behind South Dakota State University. Will NDSU get the 2 seed in the playoffs if it wins this week? I say potentially dumb because didn't the Jackrabbits beat the Bison?
They did, but I believe, and then South Dakota State last week just snuck past, I believe, Illinois State.
Okay.
In the last poll I saw, I believe they were just behind one another. Now, I'm not too worried about it, especially as North Dakota State's likely going to beat Illinois State this week. I think North Dakota State's record kind of speaks for itself. Yes, mm-hmm. They had a slip up against South Dakota State last week for the marker. But again, that's just kind of been the theme when you saw what NDSU did to them in the playoffs last year. So I think Easton Stick is getting more and more healthy every week. You're seeing Nick DeLuca, who, again, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get a Senior Bowl invite, another NDSU defensive player anyway, that looks to be breaking onto the scene, likely going to be skyrocketing up draft boards there. But again, I'm not too worried about it, because once playoff time comes, every NDSU fan knows what the goal is and what they've been able to attain here in the last decade, and that's getting to Frisco. Now, as long as they don't have a semifinal matchup with James Madison, who is undefeated, the number one team, they obviously won the FCS championship last year. For that to happen, they got to get a 2-3, or I believe a 5 seed. Now, we're going to have to see if the FCS playoff gods there put NDSU in that 4 slot to kind of set up that matchup again. But let's hope that they get it right, because, again, I'd be hard-pressed to think if NDSU plays the number 2 and 3 teams in the FCS right now in Jacksonville State and Central Arkansas that they don't take them out behind the woodshed. So we're going to have to see if they get it right, but it doesn't really bug me. Again, South Dakota State did beat NDSU, so it is what it is.
That's an elite FCS take. Couple of quickies to close for the Bow Hunter. With a right to change the opinion because we still have games to be played, which 4 teams would you place in the BCS Final 4 right now?
That's You know how to give me the tough ones.
That's what I do.
I want Oklahoma in there, especially with how well Baker Mayfield has been playing.
Best offense in the country.
He has been sensational. I think he's the Heisman front runner, even though I have a lot of love for what Saquon Barkley is doing, and I think that defenses are really selling out to stop him, just like teams did for Leonard Fournette for most of his career at LSU. So I don't think the stats tell the whole story there, especially when he gets to the NFL next year. I think he's going to be really special. So I'd go Oklahoma. I would place in Alabama from the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very interested to see what happened in that Clemson versus Miami game.
Yep.
I think that ultimately decides it. And then the other big wild card here is what happens with Wisconsin? Because say Wisconsin does beat Michigan this weekend, which I am shocked that they are 7.5-point home favorites.
Why?
Against a Michigan. Because Michigan has been playing extremely well in the last few weeks.
Well, you know more about it than me, but at last check, Michigan did not have a victory over a team with a winning record or ranked team.
That's true.
Excuse me, ranked team.
I know how good this Michigan defense is when they're humming.
Okay.
And I know that Alex Hornibrook threw two pick sixes last week, and I don't know that Wisconsin's offense is able to make a go. And I think that Michigan's offense is starting to figure some things out, especially with Brandon Peters back there now.
Okay.
So it's going to be a huge game in Camp Randall this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Wisconsin wins out, again, they're likely going to beat the Gophers at TCF Bank Stadium, because I don't really have a lot of faith in Minnesota's offense putting up another performance like they did, especially with how well that Wisconsin defense has been playing. But that's going to be the big key there, is Wisconsin that number four team? Because you also can make the argument, I think, for Ohio State, even though they've laid two duds, in every other single game, they have been absolutely sensational. The issue is their two duds are awful duds.
Yeah.
How do you allow Iowa, of all teams, who didn't score a single offensive point against Wisconsin, to put up 50 points on you?
Yep.
It is, it's mind-boggling there. So Wisconsin, I think, there is the wild card. So you go Oklahoma, Alabama, the winner of whoever Clemson and Miami is, and then we're talking about Wisconsin, potentially.
Last one, 42 seconds, you get it all. Which college quarterback do you think will go highest in the NFL draft with a right to change the opinion in January?
So are we talking? So I'm guessing the top three guys would be Sam Darnold from USC. I think Baker Mayfield, the way he's been playing of late, has really been elevating his stock. And who else would be there in terms of quarterbacks? Would it be the Washington State guy?
Yeah. The Washington State. Falk just threw.
Or Lamar Jackson too, because Lamar Jackson,
right.
I think he's going to be someone that once NFL draft time comes, that I think he's going to get a lot of love from the draft community. That's a great question. Now, you know, just because it's recency bias, we're talking a lot about Baker Mayfield, but I've been able to watch some of those games, especially of late, and he has been extremely accurate. He's just a playmaker and he's a leader. He's able to do a lot of things with his arms. I've seen some of the comparisons online. Again, I don't know. I don't cover Oklahoma football as closely as some others do, but some of the comparisons I've been seeing online have been, you know, somewhere between Colt McCoy and a small and just a little bit bigger Drew Brees. Now, you can't get any bigger of a spectrum there, considering the kind of NFL careers of the two, but I think Sam Darnold is probably just above Baker Mayfield right now, but I really, really like Lamar Jackson. I think that he just doesn't have a whole lot of help for himself out there at Louisville, and hopefully that he's able to kind of come on that Teddy Bridgewater path, because I am a self-proclaimed Teddy Bobo, and I'm hoping, I know that I had to interject this, you know my thoughts on Teddy. I hope that he's able to find the field here pretty soon, but I think that Lamar can be a first-round draft pick, potentially just like Teddy Bridgewater was.
You're my main man. I'll call you next week, all right?
Sounds good. Talk to you.
Ryan Burns, Bow Hunting Burnsy, college football, at Ryan Burns MN. Agent Blake Barrett's Institute for Athletes in studio on football and more next.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword cash to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info.
Standard data and message rates apply.
That's cash to 200-200.
You're listening to PA.
I just figured it'd be good sports talk radio.
On the Fan.
Join Corey Cove and Mark Parrish this Thursday for hockey at Willie McCoy's in Chaska from 7 to 9 p.m. Find all upcoming Coors Light NHL events. Just go to KFAN.com, keyword hockey.
Well, 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 looky here. We have a game changer in studio. He represents this guy.
Keenum shotgun puts Kyle Rudolph in motion to the right. Three receivers right, McKinnon to the left of Keenum. Case steps away from the pressure. Pumps, fires. Caught! Touchdown! Adam Thielen! Wow, what a catch by Adam Thielen. It's a 6-yard touchdown reception as we are executing some new touchdown celebration that involves hurdles.
Leapfrogging.
Leapfrogging.
It's back.
And we just leapt over Washington.
The kids call it IFA. In the business, we call it Institute for Athletes. Representing the likes of Adam Thielen and this guy.
Second and 3 at the 34. Prescott. Oh, Claiborne got a hand on it. Loose ball, and Atlanta has recovered. Tack McKinley has recovered it. And Claiborne knocked it loose. And that will be 6.
Adrian Claiborne, 6 sacks on Dak. Courtesy 92.9, the game, Falcons Radio Network.
Okay, so we have good news in that Blake Barrett's President, Institute for Athletes in studio, like that. Double B's my main man, at Blake Barrett's via Twitter. But the bad news is he has come into the Bryan Heating and Cooling studios with a sickness. And a microphone that's not on. So this whole operation has gone pear-shaped. FIBA, Fairness in Blake Barrett's Act. Why didn't you tell me when we set up 2 segments in studio that you had a cold? When not only doing 9 to noon, but voxing these final 7 life changers for the Minnesota Vikings, I'd prefer to do it sans sickness.
A couple days ago when you hit me, I felt fine. Woke up feeling terrible this morning. Oh. I felt bad canceling on you last minute.
No. If you got to go, you got to go. I mean, Teddy Talkers, Case Talker, 6-5, I open the phone lines. I mean,
hey, I've been worse. This is nothing.
Really?
We'll get through it.
Please don't get me sick right now.
Are you a germaphobe?
I'm not a germaphobe, but I just, knock on wood, it's generally from either an allergy-related deal. It's like when the weather takes major turns for yours truly, whether it goes from normal to absurdly hot or normal to absurdly cold or recently absurdly cold to now like 50, mother, I don't know what happens, but like something, I get sick.
I'm the same way.
And I'm good right now, man. And then you rolled in here with this 104 degree temperature and the sniffles and like sneezing on people and stuff. And now I'm a bit concerned.
We'll get through it. I promise you. We'll be all right.
What's it like being a big time sports agent?
I'm not. I'm just going day by day, man. Trying to enjoy it.
I can get Drew Rosenhaus on the hotline right now. I mean, if you got to go or something.
Of course. You could.
Because you're not feeling well.
Hey, I wouldn't
like
do that.
Brian Lawton or something.
I won't get you sick. I'll put a mask on for the second segment.
Do we got a mask for Double B?
I'll go find a SARS mask right now.
We have a SARS mask for the announcer. I wonder what it would sound like if I did this segment or these segments with paper towels in front of my mouth. And I need rubber bands to secure said paper towels. That is the task at hand in 5 minutes. During the elongated break. At Institute for Athletes, are you guys prepping stuff for Super Bowl week? Like, what's on your plate right now representing Adam Thielen, Adrian Claiborne, Kirk Coleman, players du jour? But, like, outside of enjoying the games and, you know.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of cool stuff during Super Bowl. There's a lot of stuff for our individual players. We're actually doing a lot of our own programming. We're doing a Q&A like panel discussion, which I think I told you about prior on Friday afternoon down at Machine Shop. The panel is going to be Adam Thielen, Adam Schefter, Aaron Andrews, Jerome Bettis, a couple other people. That should be fun, more corporate. And then Friday night we're doing a little private VIP dinner with Jamie Foxx and some friends. We're gonna do a watch party on Sunday. And
Jamie Foxx, as in the Jamie Foxx,
as in the Jamie Foxx, the very talented Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
Shaquille O'Neal is gonna be DJing. It's gonna be a good time.
Now. Thank you.
It's gonna be a good time.
Yep. I am going to have a paper towel taped around my nose and my mouth. Thank you, Nordo. I appreciate it. Please, so that means it's gonna come off my hair. It's gonna pull my hair out.
You're doing way too much over there.
I'm having a really good hair day too.
Doing way too much. Doingtoomuch.com.
Yeah. So this So let's see. Paper towel on mouth and nose sounds like this. Paper towel off mouth and nose sounds like this. The latter sounds better than the former, but not catching Blake Barrett's cold for the final seven life changers beginning Sunday at noon on the Vikings Radio Network. That's the A topic. All right, cool. So you okay with this?
Sounds good to me. Okay, you got to ask your listeners.
Appreciate that, man. I'm really happy you came in here with a cold. That was very thoughtful of you. Which teams play in the Super Bowl and why?
Which teams play in the Super Bowl?
Hard-hitting question is what we do 9 to noon.
Wow, it's a tough question. It's hard to bet against New England.
Can you face the other way when you talk, please?
I'm facing the other way.
Yeah, face the door, please. Thank you.
I think New England will get back. I always think New England is going to get back. And the NFC, I don't know. I really don't know who's going to get out of there. If the Saints defense continues to play the way they are playing.
Oh, you mean that Saints team we killed? Okay.
Yeah, they're a different team right now.
Of course
their defense
they are.
Is playing well. Uh-huh. Their rookies are stepping up. They had a really good draft. It's a tough place to play if they get home field advantage. But I think the top four teams in the NFC, I think once you get into the playoffs, it's anyone's game. I really do.
How can the Saints be playing well right now with no IFA clients?
I don't know. It's a good question.
And why didn't you get Marshawn Lattimore?
Didn't recruit him.
What about Alex Anzalone?
Who's that?
That's a linebacker, third-round pick from Florida.
He might
be hurt right now, though, because he always gets hurt.
I didn't even know who that was.
Okay, hold on. Look the other way, because I actually have to breathe. Boy, this whole paper towel trick sucks. Oh, my God. Why did you come in here sick?
You think that's going to help?
The highest-scoring team in the National Football League is at the House of Pain this weekend. The last thing I need to be is sick. And Blake Barrett's came in with a 104 temperature and
no
a cold.
I'm not that sick, PA. You'll be good, man.
What do you mean you're not? You have snot dripping down your chin. That is snot, right?
No.
It's not?
I always love that one.
I'm incredibly concerned at this moment. Okay. So, anyway, big weekend for Institute for Athletes. Athletes, Adrian Claiborne, 6 sacks for the Atlanta Falcons. Adam Thielen, 166-1. Kirk Coleman and the Panthers won last night. Jay Cutler, Miami Dolphins. I mean, was this the ultimate $10 million money grab or what?
Yeah, I don't really understand that, but you got to ask the Miami Dolphins about that.
I mean, he's generally disengaged. Can you be any more disengaged than he is with this presentation last night?
No, I don't. Yeah, that's you got to ask the decision makers there about that one.
Yeah, it. I mean, so like when I bring up a question like that, if you say something that you think is unsavory, are you worried about management of a team, like, not negotiating with you or something because you hate Jay Cutler who just ripped somebody off for $10
million? No, I'm not really worried about it. I mean, I think you know me at this point. I'm pretty outspoken. I'm not too worried about what they're going to think, but I really, you know, I can only speak to what I know. I can't speak to the internal discussions that that organization's had, and there's something to be said about, you know, Adam Gase is the coach, and coaches want players that can come in and know their system.
Yeah.
So I get that portion of it, but...
Can you look the other way when you talk, please?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. I got to breathe. Boy, this paper towel Nardo is just messing me up. I mean, it's like the fan is full of bits. I mean, it's what pretty much all of us do. This is not a bit.
No, I understand.
This is not a bit. You have been next to me during seasons where all of a sudden I get sick, a cold, and it lasts like two games.
It's bad.
Right, and it messes with my voice, and then we play highlights like 3 years later, and I listen back to a voice crack. And I'm like, oh, right, oh, great, that's right.
13-0!
Oh, great, that's right. That was the week Blake Barrett was in studio, not thoughtful enough to tell me he was sick, still came in, and got me sick. All right, paper towel going right back on, acting as SARS mask at this moment. Adrian Claiborne, what adversity has he faced during his life or during his career? I mean, he just had 6 sacks and a strip sack and stuff like that, man. You know, I know when he was coming out of Iowa, you know, he was pretty highly touted, but, like, what adversity has he faced?
He's had a lot. He was born with a condition. He has a nerve damage condition in his shoulder called Erb's palsy and really only has use of one of his arms and still went on to have an unbelievable career at Iowa. And
He only can use one of his arms?
Yeah.
And he's playing in the NFL?
He couldn't bench press just the bar when he came out of college and we started preparing for the combine. But then his first year, I mean... He's been on IR and missed the. He's been in the league. This is his seventh year, I believe, and he's been on IR two or three of the years.
Yeah.
And last year he had a really good year with Atlanta in their first quarter of the playoff game. He tears his bicep, and he had never been in the playoffs before. He spent 4 years with the Bucks. They were bad. Ooh. His first year with the Falcons, they didn't make it. In the first quarter of the first playoff game last year against Seattle, he goes down again, and he was devastated. I mean, he was talking about retiring. I've never seen him so depressed, and it's nice to see him bounce back, and no one deserves it more. He works his tail off. He's a great guy. He's a pro's pro. He's a great teammate.
Yeah.
I'm happy for him. He deserves it.
There aren't many teams in the NFL where Adam Thielen would not be their number one receiver. Don't you agree?
I do agree.
Like, I did that bit yesterday, 9 to noon. I thought it would be 8 minutes. It ended up being like 22 minutes. And we went through, hold on. And we went through a fair amount of teams, you know, where he, like honestly, at this stage of their careers, I would prefer to have Adam Thielen over Dez Bryant. And we laid out some reasons why and stuff like that. So you got to be really proud.
I am. He deserves it. He works. He can play. Like, it's not a story or a secret anymore. He deserves it. I'm really happy for him. It's just now everyone else gets to see it. It's great.
What do you think of the Vikings quarterback deal?
I think it's peculiar.
Me too.
it's different. That's for sure.
It's tricky.
It's tricky. Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know how to elaborate on it, but it's a weird scenario. It's a bizarre scenario.
What do you know about Sean McVay, age 31, and like what makes him so innovative?
You know what? My take on McVay, I personally don't think he's the most innovative coach in the world.
Right.
I think he coaches to the players and the talent around him. And that sounds, I guess, cliche or simplistic, but you watch a lot of coaches around the league, they coach their system mm-hmm. and not necessarily coach to the players' abilities and talents around them.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you have a lot of coaches trying to stick a square peg into a round hole. I think what Sean McVay does really well is he's designed the offense fits his personnel really well. He's a great communicator.
Yeah.
He doesn't have this monster ego where it's my way or the highway.
Puppy.
He's relatable. And I think he's also smart enough to say, let me put Wade Phillips on the other side of the ball. I don't have to touch the defense.
Yeah.
The defense will do what it does. There's not a better defensive coordinator in the history of the league than Wade Phillips. And I can focus on getting this offense turned around.
What makes Wade Phillips a better defensive mind than Mike Zimmer?
I don't necessarily think he is. He's just got the credibility and experience. He's been there, done that. So does Mike Zimmer. I'm not saying Wade Phillips is better than Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer is better than Wade Phillips. They both have an incredible pedigree and have the experience. So I think if you pull people around the league, they would say either of those people running your defense, you're going to be just fine.
Blake, what do you predict the offseason holds for Kirk Cousins and or Drew Brees?
The Kirk cut, you say holds or holes?
Holds, H-O-L-D-S.
I don't see Drew Brees going anywhere. I just...
Same.
He's going to be in New Orleans. I would be very surprised to see him go anywhere.
Same.
He's really close with Sean Payton. I don't see Sean Payton going anywhere. Kirk Cousins is interesting. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there. I would say that the fact that he's not already re-signed or didn't get re-signed this offseason probably means he's going somewhere else. Because he's clearly not eager to be back there. Otherwise, that deal would already be done. They either don't think he's the guy or he doesn't want to be there. Either way, to me, that spells he's going somewhere else.
Do you have any clients on the Browns?
I do not currently.
Ooh, what if you had a client on the Browns? Good luck getting a pay raise.
I'm sure it'll happen. The way free agency and the draft go, you got 1 year you got five Packers and no Vikings. And next year you got no Vikings and five Packers. There's a lot of turnover in this business.
Hey, Blake, next time we do this and you're not sick, we'll do it a little longer, okay?
I actually feel pretty good.
Blake, yeah, I know, but you're scaring the hell out of me. Blake Barrett's president of Institute for Athletes. Off that Teddy and Case talker that we brought up about 90 minutes ago, if anybody has any thoughts on the way things developed yesterday with Mike Zimmer into this Rams game, we could take a few calls. 800-320-5326. 651-989-5326. 9 to noon. Back after this.
You're listening to PA.
Ben, you would know this more than PA would know.
Hello.
Is the mental part of the game. Up here, it's so mental.
What do you think? I'm dumb?
On the Fan.
Been on the Fan, brought to you in part by Prism Research.
I can't wait. I can't wait until tomorrow.
Join KFAN and the Minnesota Vikings at Mills Fleet Farm in Lakeville as we broadcast live all day, December 12th, collecting toys for tots presented by CenturyLink. Details, KFAN.com, keyword toys.
Could never come.
Tomorrow is the bird bit.
I know
it can end any minute.
But I pray tomorrow comes. But it could be too late. I'm ready to smile, but for a long while, wouldn't take much to get me down.
You think Jason Zucker scores the first goal of the game tonight?
I hope he does.
It'd be sweet. It'd be nice. But in case you've missed it, he's been doing as well as he has because he's been on the road and he's getting sleep. Had you heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, same. Well, it's quarterback talker, though. Holy cow. I want to reconstruct the presentation tomorrow to give more people an opportunity to get in and let their voices be heard.
Well, they got to get in before the head coach speaks at during the 11 a.m. hour, right?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's a cinch at 11:15 tomorrow. He's going to crack the mic and share exactly who his quarterback is going to be for the newest, biggest game of the season. Oh, yeah. You know, Mike Zimmer operates.
Always clear and forthcoming with information.
Brian and Randolph, good morning.
Hey, PA and Nardo. So I got a take on the Case and Teddy Tucker. You know, I think Zimmer's probably just doing it maybe. I mean, he obviously likes Teddy a lot, but I think he likes Case too. And I think it's a big deal that he's probably just trying to keep the Rams defense maybe off guard a little bit on which quarterback to line up against.
Thanks for listening to 9 to Noon. I disagree with your take because Teams generally plan more for scheme than quarterback. Believe it or not, Case and Teddy have similar skill sets. So therefore, it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's just the ways and means become rearranged. I believe Mike Zimmer prefers Teddy Bridgewater over Case Keenum. But that doesn't mean he prefers number 5 over number 7 this week. But I believe in the long run, Mike is not completely settled with what's transpiring here. Hammy.
Hey, P.A., how are you? It's been a while.
Hammy, hold on. Hey, Nardo.
What up?
Do you have a parody ready to go in 5 minutes?
I'll have the end of the show wrap. Like I just got to write
Dalvin
it real quick.
Dalvin Cook, nicknamed Chef, like Teddy and the Chef.
I wish I came up with that.
Yeah, just checking, man. I mean, listenership might be big now, man. Might want that spotlight. Hammy, go ahead.
Hey, the one thing I wanted to talk about is kind of the bigger picture and the speculation that, you know, the window for us, I think we're set up to be good for, you know, it's not like a one-year window or whatever. And these guys are getting paid big money, you know, quarterbacks. And we've got to make the right decision down the road. I mean, you got to look at Bradford and Teddy both. Durability? That's a little bit of a question. And it's like you look at some of the bigger guys. Of course, Rodgers got hurt this year, but durability, awesome.
Yeah.
Stafford, durability, awesome. And that's like a key that, you know, we're going to pay big money. It's going to be against the cap. And, I mean, right now, personally, I just roll with Case until injury or, you know, whatever, if he just is horrid. And I don't see that happening. And hats off to Shermer because he is the MVP this year.
Hammy, I like the way you're seeing it. Have a good day. Bobby in East Grand Forks, it's 9 to noon.
PA, how are you today?
Hello, Bobby.
I just wanted to weigh in on this. We're in Losersville, PA. It's not very often that our squad is 7-2. Sinking our hooks into the division and making a playoff run like we are this year.
All right.
So having said that, if Mike Zimmer, who I respect tremendously for what he's done, and I like his personality coming out of the Leslie Frazier bit where he doesn't really say much, and I like Zimmer's personality. I like that he gets fired up.
Yeah.
But if he is seriously contemplating putting in Teddy Bridgewater, who hasn't played in a year and a half or what have you, for a quarterback who has led us to 7-2, and it goes pear-shaped, PA, in my opinion, that's a fireable offense. We cannot play Teddy Bridgewater over what Case Keenum has done so far. And as you said earlier, Cordarrelle Patterson, Mike Wallace, those guys don't leave on such average stats, if you will, if Bridgewater hits some long bombs to him. So I like Teddy. What he's come back from is amazing.
Yeah.
You can't play him. You can't play him, PA.
I think you formulated some cogent opinions. 2G in Minneapolis. What up?
What up, PA?
What up, GG?
Quit, man. I'm kind of tired of this Teddy Bridgewater this, Teddy that. We like the kid, you know. He's sweet, nice. But at the end of the day, man, this man Case, he got us to 7-2. You know, maybe one win away from a divisional title on Thanksgiving, you know. I just think we got to keep rolling with Case until he, you know, dropped the ball a couple more times like Sunday. But hey, the coach knows what he's doing. I know he's a Teddy guy. But Zim, come on, man. Tell us who your starting quarterback is.
Appreciate you, 2G. Have a good day, all right? Rob in Wilmer, this is 9 to Noon.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
I think Zimmer will come out tomorrow and say Case will be the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And I think he does deserve to be the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
But with that being said, Teddy's a playmaker. And do you think this offense is disciplined enough to adapt to, say, Shermer putting – like a little list of plays for Teddy Bridgewater to go in there every once in a while,
yeah,
and kind of go in between the two.
Well, I mean, let's go step by step here, just quickly. You know, okay, Teddy is a playmaker, but I also watched Case put a 51-yard double move on Josh Norman with Stephon Diggs. Thielen 166-1. We're finding a way to run for over 100 yards a game without Dalvin Cook. New offensive line. Case moves, doesn't take sacks. So I mean, I think Case is making plays too.
He is. And I love Case. I just have a feeling they want to do whatever they can do to see Teddy in a game.
Right.
And I feel like they might throw him in a small package like that.
Okay.
Instead of like throw out the Wildcat, throw out all that. Instead of doing the Wildcat, throw Teddy in there for a play or two.
Okay, well, then how about we stick with Case? We beat the Rams. We beat the Lions. We split with Atlanta and Carolina. So that is 10 wins. So that makes you 10-3 with three to go. At Cincinnati here, at Lambeau, at Chicago, the Vikings will win all three of those games. So that, I mean, now what about using Teddy at that stage of the equation? You know, but then the conversation will be, it was great to see Teddy, but late in the season, you had everything locked up, you're playing ratty teams. Yeah. Ryan in Woodbury, hello.
Hey, PA, how's it going?
Hey.
I think Zimmer's had his mind made up since the beginning of the season that he's going to put Teddy in this game. And I mean, Case has done well. I mean, aside from, I think, yesterday, this past week in the Buccaneers week, I mean, I don't think he's been, you know, outstanding. I mean, he's been good enough to win us games. I think Teddy can definitely win us games. And I think the fact that everybody says, you know, well, look at Teddy's record when he was in. But Teddy didn't have the line that we have now. Teddy didn't have the running game that we have now. Teddy didn't have receivers that got open like we do now. So, you know, I think he can do well. But, I just think, and just from hearing what Zimmer, you know, was talking about yesterday, I think he's got his mind made up beforehand.
But you know what? In 2015, Adrian Peterson ran for like 1,300 yards. The offensive line stayed intact the entire season. I mean, Khalil was decent. Sullivan was good. You know, you got around T.J. Clemmings, a right tackle. So, I mean, that division-winning season, man, it wasn't that. It's not like Teddy was against all odds.
He was sacked more than 80 times in those first 2 years.
Oh,
so it's tough.
Yeah, here we go. This is great. Talker Tuesday, a Case Keenum parody song is coming up very shortly. Can't wait for that. And tomorrow, we're back at it at 9 in the morning. I'm Paul Allen from the KFAN Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios, producer Rap Show.
Hey, the Wrap's brought to you by the Paddy Wagon. Delicious burgers, 61st and Nicollet. Go get it, the Paddy Wagon.
And winter is coming.
Will Coach Zimmer appeal to rationale or his emotion? All while Case keeps the squad in full motion. Teddy is his guy with whom he may want to ride or die. Sitting in his office blaring one last cry. wants to put him in, looking for a reason. After the brutal injury killed his season, the rehab, the mental struggle should be commended. But an early return could mean the team's dream is ended. Will Zucker go for seventh heaven tonight with all that extra sleep he's getting at night? Hope he took a nap from Philly on that homebound flight, cause he's home now and that baby struggle is real, right?
Mission Minneapolis.
Where's number seven? But they left him in at 11. They left too much time for Teddy.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel.